Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
Corolla Drinks fans, 818 Rye Whiskey is available now at CorollaDrinks.com. 818 is a whiskey from Adam's backyard, not the gated communities in the same area code. It's aged 3 years in new American oak and couples a malty sweetness with a complex rye finish. Adam and the team made this whiskey for fans of the show. They made this whiskey for the regulars. Get your bottle of 818 Rye at CorollaDrinks.com. Hurry, we will sell out.
Well, in this show, Mark's in Chicago with Jussie or Juicy Smollett. Nobody knows. Working that top secret case. We'll get into Judge Kavanaugh, some thoughts about that. We'll get into that crazy story with the kid and the boating and the execution and that whole thing as well. And we'll take a deep dive into Britney Spears and conservatorships and lots of interesting insights there from Mark and how that works. First, I'll tell you about Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? Well, you do one or the other. And then there's your automotive policy. How about you get your bundle working with your automotive and your homeowners or your renter's insurance? It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around your house. So go to geico.com, get a quote. See just how much you could be saving when you get your bundle working at Geico. That is geico.com, and get your bundle on.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get on. No choice but get on. Mandate. Get it on and welcome to the best hour or so, because Mark's got a heart out. He's got a reservation in Nobu tonight. In the universe, it's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. He's in, Mark's in Chicago.
In Chicago, Illinois for top secret hearing, which I'm not allowed to talk about. Isn't that the worst when I can't talk about stuff? I just hate that. At some point, I'm just going to have to segue out of the law so I can just talk about everything.
You're there with your client, Jussie Smollett, who...
I missed Juicy last night. He showed up. We were at another restaurant, and he showed up, like, according to the gang, he was there 3 minutes after I left. But he was flanked by our team going into the top secret hearing today. So the team was there. We were there. I can't talk about it, but we can talk about, you know what we can talk about? Britney Spears.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the best thing about Britney Spears is that it has united both the left, the right, and the ACLU. Who would have thought that Britney Spears would have brought the left, the right, and the ACLU together?
I might be able to break some news for you guys. In the last 10 minutes here, the news came out that the judge has ruled she can hire the lawyer she wants, Matthew Rosengart, who has stated that he is, you know, going to help her end the conservatorship.
So
yeah, which, they filed a brief today, didn't they, Gary? I think I saw that somewhere. The ACLU filed a brief, which, by the way, what Adam and I have been saying for about, I don't know, four shows, that it's hard for me to believe that you surrender your Sixth Amendment rights totally to even question the fact. I mean, even if you're 5150, you get a lawyer that can try to get you out of a 5150. So I understand the conservatorship is kind of a legal catch 22. But I suspected, and I think we had said, that this judge, who I've appeared in front of fairly recently this year, and I like a lot, I thought she was going to do the right thing. And it sounds like, Gary, you just broke the news that she did.
Is what's the criteria for the conservatorship? And I know it's elastic and it probably moves, and maybe it's in the eye of the beholder, but she's been in a stable relationship for X number of years. She hasn't gotten any trouble with the IRS or missed any dental appointments. At what point do you just go, well, this person is functioning? I mean, and sort of like, we have probation. You commit a crime, you go to prison, or you don't, and you go out on probation. But eventually the probation ends if you don't get a bunch of DUIs and domestic battery charges. You just, you're done with your probation. You've strung together enough good years that we now release you from this probation.
I read today, I think Harmeet retweeted, and I wish I had kept the name of the woman who did the investigation, the billing by the lawyers involved. And I think we had talked about this, and here was some proof of it. The Harmeet was a little snarky, and I think probably had reason to be. The billing, there was 500 hours under the title Media Matters, meaning dealing with media or media related things, and they were paying the amounts of money that were going out were unbelievable, and so I think, unfortunately, that sometimes there's this momentum that just keeps going in things when somebody's feeding, you know, and they're billing away and they're getting paid. You know, the billable hour is an awful thing sometimes. It has one of the reasons I always think contingency has more value in terms of if you create value, you get a value. But, you know, the contingency and the work, contingency work has got such a bad rap as compared to the billable hour, which you've heard me say it before. I mean, you hate your lawyer after your, I don't care who you are. You hate your lawyer after the second bill.
What do you reckon 500 hours is in terms of billable hours?
Look at this, 500K for Media Matters. And 1.5 Holland and Knight for the last 8 months. Liz Day, there you go. She's the one who posted this. And do you have Harmeet's, there you go, 188 grand for the appointment of a trust. Bessemer Trust was, I believe, said that they never actually did any work on this case, which was kind of interesting. Took 188 grand to get him up to speed to not do any work.
And this is all coming out of Britney Spears's pocket. I mean, ironically, yeah, she's funding the case against her.
I think, I could be mistaken, but I think there was even that somebody billed for writing a cease and desist letter to her. And if that's the case, that really is, to quote Dershowitz, that's the height of chutzpah. Can you imagine? You're spending her money to write her a cease and desist letter, which is just wild. I mean, you'd think somebody would have said at that point, wait a second here, maybe we'll just pro bono that one.
Is her lawyers, or sorry, not her lawyers, but the ones, I guess, representing her dad or the trust, you talk about all these billable hours for media stuff. So this is a campaign that's being waged in the hearts and the minds of Americans. Like, how do you even justify the media stuff versus the nuts and bolts of a case?
You know, that's a very good question, because I know that a lot of the large firms now they've got departments that are called crisis management, and they will bill out for crisis management. And I assume Media Matters is just a soft-pedaled way of saying crisis management. So when, for instance, the documentary comes out and they're starting to get under siege and all of this stuff is starting to be exposed, then there's going to be you're going to get phone calls. You're going to get all kinds of press inquiries. I've seen billing, for instance, to clients for people who do the clipping services of all the media surrounding it and things of that nature. So this becomes part and parcel of the new world order that we live in. The part that I think infuriates people is you would never have this kind of 13-year operation if there was not. I mean, I just think it's without question if she wasn't an earner, and it fits in, as we've said before, with your kind of your earner philosophy of life, earners versus non-earners,
and empty bags. Right.
The empty bags, right? I mean, that's yes. the How else are you gonna justify? Nobody is gonna be sitting there doing pro bono work for 13 years to look after Britney Spears if she didn't have if she wasn't earning tens of millions of dollars. And I had seen before, prior to the Hulu documentary, that Adam Streisand, who's a lawyer in LA, well thought of, had tried to get in and become her lawyer. Either she had reached out to him or somebody had recommended, and they wouldn't allow him in because under the conservatorship, you may not be credible, competent, or of sound mind in order to select your own lawyer, which is kind of, I mean, there's various areas of the law that are peculiar, and this happens to be one of them. I mean, if you're charged with a criminal offense, you can get a court-appointed lawyer, but you can also reach out and hire your own lawyer when there's a loss of liberty. Here you've got not only a potential loss of liberty, you've got a potential loss of your economics. And in the idea that somehow your Sixth Amendment rights and your reproductive rights could be impacted by that, you strike people, is bizarre. But I looked at the code, and they're clearly under the code is support for it. So it's one of these things where you got to hope that you've got, like we apparently have here with this judge, somebody who did the right thing.
Well, what does the judge do? I mean, obviously, her side is saying, I don't need this conservatorship. And the other side is saying, oh, you must. It's important because of safety, financial or not, decisions being made. They're going to mount a case. But what case are they mounting? I mean, she's essentially, in my mind, it seems like she's been hanging with her boyfriend, playing a few shows in Vegas, and then going back to videotaping herself dancing in her home. I think her house burnt down or something burnt down not too long ago, which is probably not a good look for her revoking the conservatorship. But at some point, doesn't the judge just have to go, it's been 13 years. I don't think there's enough here.
Well, I think what the apparatus that gets set up in conservatorships is you've got people who get appointed by the court who will assess the mental state and say whether or not the mental state is such that they can handle their own affairs. The kind of unique situation here is that not only is she a high earner, she's also relatively young. Normally, conservatorships would be, when you think of conservatorships in high-profile situations, it's usually at end of life. It's a Casey Kasem. It's a Glenn Campbell. It's a B.B. King. End of life, there's a substantial estate. Whether it's a current earning power, clearly there are royalties coming in those cases that I just mentioned, and monies that have to be managed, and otherwise you would assume would be mismanaged. And maybe, you know, the oft times you will see a second or a third wife fighting with a child and talking about access. Stan Lee was another one recently where there's been a conservatorships and fights arising out of that. And so that's normally what the system, if you will, is kind of built to address. That's the kind of end of life solutions. When you start getting into this situation, when you've got somebody who's of a fairly young age who is an earner and can earn the kind of money that generates lawyers' fees in the millions of dollars in order to service it, that's I think probably exposes something that the system was never designed to deal with.
That seems like a really compelling argument. I mean, I feel like what you just said, basically saying this wasn't even designed for this application. And can you name me other contemporary celebrities that are in the same situation? I mean, you know, we all know celebrities can be batshit crazy. There's substance issues. There's all kinds of mistakes being made. Yet there's no conservatorship for, I you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I cannot think of, you know, Johnny Depp doesn't have a conservatorship. He makes a lot of money and he makes a lot of bad decisions, but he doesn't have a conservatorship. And, you know, you could have said that about Michael Jackson. You could say that about half your clients. I mean, they all need a conservatorship, but the point is that it doesn't really apply in
well,
this.
I have two observations on that. It's interesting when you say about the clients, because I think I've mentioned this to you before. The fine line between kind of artistic genius, if you will, creative genius.
Yeah, Kanye West could use a conservatorship.
Right. There's a very fine line. And if that's the case, why is it that it's her? And as you say, not Johnny Depp. It's funny you mentioned Johnny Depp, because a female reporter acquaintance of mine today said this was a sexist driven thing, that and used Johnny Depp, invoked Johnny Depp as well. Said, why not Johnny Depp, who famously has had managers ripping him off, if you believe what his allegations have been in his
it is kind of sexist, and that, you know, the little lady knows not what she does. We need to sort of need a steady male hand to guide her. But yeah, I didn't even think about the fact that it's been 13 years.
The only comparable situation, I'll give you one. In fact, when I first got hired by Mike Tyson, it was a number of years ago, where he was in a bankruptcy for just an unbelievable amount of years, where his earnings were limited by decree of the kind of the settlement agreement that he was wired into, and for a prolonged period of time. And it was equally as kind of onerous on him. And we finally were able to get him out of that. These situations where you've got somebody who can earn money, unfortunately, can sometimes go awry.
So predictions, first off, timeline, when do they wrap this thing up? And then what do they say when they wrap it up?
I think as Gary says, the lawyer will be allowed to substitute in, which I think makes sense, because the previous lawyer had done a motion to withdraw. So obviously the court's going to kind of lean towards making sure that there's a seamless transition. Then I think what's going to happen is you'll have another evaluation, or maybe two or three, depending, mental health evaluations. And then probably you'll put together, or he'll put together, a structure that will say, look, here is a structure which will ensure that we can segue out of a conservatorship or lessen the terms of the conservatorship. And I think it'll happen relatively quickly.
All right. Then there's Epstein in a little black book.
Right. Gary, I was going to ask. I haven't looked today because I've been squirreled away. Have we had any names out today?
I didn't see anything new today. I believe that the one that we talked about on Beyond a Reasonable Doubt was kind of the big name that came out of that book. But I was also seeing that there are several different books. The book that you're talking about is a 1997 date book with like 356 entries, I believe. And there's a couple of other ones, one that had over 1,100 and another one that was, I think, 700 or 800. So there's a lot of different names that I'm sure are going to come out.
The let's just talk about the concept of the date book. Is this just an old school phone numbers book, or is this a keeping records of book?
It appears to be phone numbers and addresses, like very, you know, before smartphones, people had to carry that stuff around written down, and it seems like it was just strictly that. It had, you know, home numbers and office numbers and occasionally an address.
We didn't have a rating system next to it.
no star system, no.
My grandmother had this old, for a million years, she had this metal cased thing. And you would slide the metal arrow down to the letter that you wanted.
And then the thing would lift up.
It would pop up.
It would pop up and it would take those cards up. I remember those.
Yes.
But nobody has any idea what we're talking about, but it was the coolest thing. You would slide it down to the letter,
right,
like a P, and then it would open up and you would have a list of all the P's, the last names with P.
Ingenious. So we'll put that on hold for now.
One thing I wanted to hear your guys' thoughts on is the Richard Sherman story that's breaking today. I'm not sure if you're even aware of this, Ace.
DB, okay. Richard Sherman?
Yeah, he's currently a free agent. He played 7 years with Seattle. In the last three, he's been with San Francisco, and he's a vice president of the NFL Players Association. Apparently, he was at his in-law's house attempting to get in, and they called the police, and when the police showed up, they were trying to engage with him. Simultaneously, the highway patrol found damage to a pylon on the freeway, and then subsequently found off the next exit a severely damaged vehicle with wheels all screwed up and everything messed up. They ran the registration, and it was Sherman. So it is presumed that he walked from that location to his in-law's house, and when the cops got there, he was very uncooperative, and they ended up having to stick a canine unit on him. And
wow.
He is now in jail for domestic burglary of some sort. And he's not going to get in front of a judge until Thursday afternoon. He was arrested 2 a.m. Wednesday morning. So he's still in jail with no bail, which apparently no bail for the crime he was arrested for is not uncommon. You get your bail when you go in front of a judge.
So sound like maybe some drunk driving and
yes.
then took it on foot.
Took it on foot and then tried to get in through a window or a door or something, and Johnny Law got called.
Mm. You don't often hear about people trying to break into their in-laws. It's usually the other way around.
Heading out.
Right. They want to get out of their
tunneling.
In-laws.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does remind me. I did get my car destroyed. Mark, I don't think you've ever heard this one, but I think you'd like it. I got my car destroyed when it was parked out front of my apartment a million years ago by a drunk driver, and he just completely totaled out my car. It was an old Toyota hatchback. It was fine. I mean, who cares? But it was totaled. And then the guy took off in his pickup truck, and he was able to get, several hundred yards away in his pickup truck. He had like two flat tires and overheated and blah, blah, blah. Then he got out of his pickup truck and he took it on foot. And they caught up to him the next day or something, but he never got the drunk driving charge because I guess they couldn't prove it because he took off and they didn't find him that night and, wasn't going to blow whatever blood alcohol the next day. And so we found ourselves in court. And the one thing I did realize about being in court for the first time is
How old were you?
I was like 28. That's probably like 28, 29. I remember walking up to the bench or to the little picket fence with the gate and Van Nuys, and I asked a question, and I was yelled at to sit down. And it made me realize everyone in court is guilty. There's no defendant. There's no victim. You're just here. You're getting yelled at. So I had the thought, which is everyone here is guilty. That was number one. I tell people all the time, there is no good credit. There's just bad credit and then just credit. But there's no actual good credit. It had happened a million times where I went, why do I have to go through all these hoops? I have this. I've done this. Look at my history. And the answer is there's only bad credit. There is no actual thing called good credit. There's just bad credit and non-bad credit.
All stick, no carrot. Right.
Right. So I was getting yelled at, and I realized, everyone here is a criminal. And then we sat there, and the judge looked at the guy who destroyed my car, and he looked at me, and he said, what do you want? And I said, well, high blue book is $5,000, and low blue book is $4,000. Let's just meet in the middle of $4,500. And the guy who destroyed my car said, are you kidding me? That car had like four bald tires. Paint was chipping. The thing was on its last legs. There's no way is it worth medium, mid blue book. And I remember thinking, wow, the balls on this guy. I thought if this guy was Japanese, he would have killed himself years ago. But fine. The balls. The guy destroys my car and then flees. And now he's haggling with me over a couple hundred bucks. And then I had a manila folder. And I held up the manila folder. And I said to the guy, his name is Kenny. I said, Kenny, this is a folder. This folder is filled with receipts. One of the receipts is for four new tires. Now, we could go back to the judge's chambers and I could open this manila envelope and spill out thousands of dollars worth of receipts that would make it very painful for you and you would look like a liar, or you could just agree to this price and we could get on with our lives. And he looked at the folder and said, fine. But it was great. He was like, let the baby have his bottle. $4,500. I thought, God, where is the dignity? Then I realized, that was the first part of this. I had my epiphany when I realized everyone in the courtroom was essentially a criminal. Then later on, he worked out a payment plan with Van Nuys. And at some point, a few months in, I called him up. And I said, what's going on with this payment plan? I haven't received any money. I don't know when the last time I got, you know, $65 a month for, you know, 10 years. I don't think I've gotten any money in a long time. And Van Nuys Court said, yeah, we don't have any way of keeping track of that. And I said, you don't. Because when I get pulled over, the guy's got a computer in his car, and a few taps of his fingers, he can tell me when the car was registered and who it's registered to and how old I am and if I have any priors or any warrants or anything. You have a lot of technology when it comes to keeping track of people you get money from, but the people who you're have the victims, money. When you're collecting money, you have no system whatsoever in place to figure that out.
There used to be a... where when you would pay restitution, the probation department would take the cost of probation services off the top. So somebody would get ordered to pay, for instance, 10 grand, and whatever probation services would be 3 grand. And this person would pay the 3 grand. The victim would never get the 3 grand payment because probation would say for having the guy go and check in, putting his hand on the kiosk at the Van Nuys department, that cost, you know, $400 or something like that. And that gets lopped right off the top. So I feel your pain, or I know of your pain. I've heard this complaint for years. I think they've kind of solved that problem a little bit. Judges got very wise to that very quickly.
All right. Next subject, I'll do a spot, but Gary can tease it.
I can give you guys an update on the Kavanaugh case that we've been following out of South Carolina and some potential shenanigans back on the night of the boat crash.
Oh, this is not the serial rapist Supreme Court justice? Different Kavanaugh?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's different.
When is that guy going to be indicted on rape charges? And he was teenagers.
I saw a salacious article about that gentleman today.
Oh, really? Yes. In his raping ways?
No. Not exactly, but he's certainly painted as aggressive and dangerous.
Oh, wow. LA Times, New York Times.
I think it was
USA
on
Today.
Medium.com.
All right, we'll get into that. I laugh my ass off, as I told you, because when he was nominated, he did the press conference with his like two daughters next to him, and he's like, "Forget about Supreme Court justice. My most important role is soccer coach to my girls 12 and up soccer league." And I was like, "Why is he pitching this? You know, this feminine." First kind of good dad, kind of my daughter's kind of thing. And I was like, oh, because he's about to be attacked as being a serial rapist. And that's the way we have to do it these days. All right. Let me tell you first about BetterHelp. Reasonable Doubt is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. As we get to the end of the COVID, the light at the end of the COVID tunnel, many are still feeling emotionally out of sorts. You may not feel depressed, but maybe your relationships are suffering, or you're anxious, you're struggling in your career, you have trouble sleeping. You need to talk to someone. Visit BetterHelp.com/reasonable doubt. Fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and match you with professional licensed therapists. Start communicating in under 48 hours via secure weekly video. You can do it on the phone. You can even do live chat sessions. It's easy and free to change your counselor if you need a better fit. It's BetterHelp, right, Gary?
That's absolutely right. Online therapy is convenient and more affordable than in-person therapy. And our listeners get 10% off their first month of online therapy at BetterHelp.com/ReasonableDoubt. That's BetterHelp.com/ReasonableDoubt.
All right. So
the article I read was, if you believe Michael Wolff, who is the author and oft-times Trump critic, he's got a new book out and called Landslide, I think is the name of it. And they keep releasing excerpts of it. And the most amazing thing is this guy has been on CNN nonstop for years during the Trump presidency, making all kinds of accusations and allegations about Trump. And apparently Trump sat down with him and did several interviews.
Oh, and that guy. Yeah.
Yeah. You know which one I'm talking about. And did for this new book. He's written previous ones. And in the book, he talks about that Trump says Trump's very upset that Kavanaugh didn't come to his defense during the election and take some of those cases, because everybody told him, if you believe Michael Wolff and believe what Trump had said, that Trump says everybody was telling him to pull.
I'll give you Kavanaugh's the exact quote,
nomination.
Mark.
Yeah.
Quote, I might as well tell you, Kavanaugh, practically every senator called me, including Crazy Mitch, and said, cut him loose, sir. Cut him loose. He's killing us. He's killing us, Kavanaugh.
Really?
I had to really try hard there not to do a Trump impression.
That's good.
Yeah, but, you know, I like the fact that he calls Crazy Mitch.
Well, that part exactly is where I wanted to fall into it, you know?
Think about what people underestimate is his ability to hang nicknames on people. I mean, he really, you know, Little Marco, and he had an amazing low-energy jab.
I was going to say, low-energy. Yeah.
Pocahontas, which you can't say anymore for Elizabeth Warren. I mean, he, you know, old and slow Joe. I mean, he it's an amazing thing. The book says he's as disappointed in Amy Coney Barrett and Gorsuch, but he kind of, it sounds like he reserves his ire for Kavanaugh of all people.
Well, it's kind of an interesting psychological experiment, and but you tell me what you think of this, Mark. Nobody is above, and let's just talk in broad strokes here, but I'd be curious about this, and we brought it up before. We talked about that judge who was in the Bay Area, I think, who presided over the Stanford rape.
Yeah, Judge Aaron Persky,
right?
And who got recalled by that professor at Stanford?
And he just basically said, "Here's the sentencing guidelines. Here's what we got. I did my job," and his life was destroyed. Right.
Right.
So there was a time when the Supreme Court were a bunch of, you know, elderly gentry, and we didn't know what their home addresses were. We couldn't dox them. We couldn't go after them. There was no, you know, write your congressman or something. You know, that's what they would say. Write your congressman. And now there is no escape of the scrutiny. You know what I mean? Like if you are a Supreme Court judge and you're like, well, I would like to make abortion illegal throughout the land, your life might be destroyed, ostensibly.
And vice versa.
Right.
Right.
Right. And it touches everyone. They get to everyone. I mean, it's like I was talking about Fauci. You know, Fauci is an immunologist who's supposed to be setting policy for the country. He gets questioned. I mean, I screamed about it at the time, you know, a year ago. They're saying, so you can't go to church and you can't go to a ball game and you can't go into a movie theater, but you can march with Black Lives Matter. And he was like, well, I have no opinion on that. Well, he has opinions on large groups gathering. He just doesn't have an opinion on a Black Lives Matter rally because he's caught in. He's in it. He can be touched. They can get to him. He doesn't want to go home and be on the front of CNN with them talking shit or read about a bunch of tweets. So everyone is getting, everyone can be reached now. And so if you take a, Trump is disappointed in all who he appointed. He's disappointed in who he appointed. Sorry to go Nipsey Russell on your ass, because I think there's this phenomenon, and you tell me, that's a long build up to this. He appoints someone who everyone assumes is conservative because Trump's appointing them, and that's who's in charge. And then the left screams bloody murder. Oh, this is going to be the end of all the liberties and abortion rights, and it's going to be the end. It's going to be the end of everything. And then the person has to endure this crazy circus of being confirmed and being called, and with all the doom and gloom that goes along with it, right? If this, if this person is appointed, here's what we can look forward to. All right. Then the person gets appointed, and then one of these type cases shows up. But the natural human condition is to go, oh, I can't do what they said I was going to do. Then it would confirm all their worst thoughts, their greatest times. And so they're like, when you get appointed, all you're going to do is Trump's bidding. You're going to get in there. You're just going to do Trump's bidding. And then they get appointed. And then there's some case that comes in and he wants them to look at election laws or voter rules. And they go, I can't do that because then I will just be doing what they said I was going to do. And I want to show them that I'm not that person.
That's interesting, because that's not the theory. I've heard two theories specifically on Kavanaugh. And look, my interaction with him many, many years ago was when he was,
pulling a train.
AKA Butt Boy.
You're high-fiving.
AKA Butt Boy during Whitewater. The interesting
theory.
Butt Boy.
All right.
Like if I get one of my cases in front of the U.S. Supreme Court and he leans down and asks, do you remember what you used to call me down in Little Rock? So the one theory is that this is somebody who always has wanted to go along to get along, that he's one of those types. He's a social personality, and that that when you saw that fury, that hurt, that kind of lashing out during the confirmation hearings, that was somebody who could not believe what was happening to him. And all of his efforts since then has been to kind of ingratiate himself or to kind of mend all of that. That's one of the theories. One of the other theories is this was somebody who was not unknown, meaning he was on, I believe, the DC circuit, had written many opinions. And if you read his opinions, he's not that far outside of kind of the mainstream Republican kind of orthodoxy. And what he did at the U.S. Supreme Court in certain instances, you should not be that surprising. And but I don't know. And this, once again, I'm assuming, but I assume Trump is not there digesting his legal opinions. And he's relying on other people to tell him that. It was probably Don McGahn, who was the White House counsel, who was probably telling him those things and or telling Trump what he needed to know. And I doubt that Don McGahn was answering questions like, hey, if their election case gets there, is he going to move heaven and earth in order to undo the election? I don't think Don McGahn doesn't strike me as somebody who would do that. So the one theory is it's strictly personality and of who he is, and the other that it's that he's got an ideological paper trail that would have been predictive that this is the kind of stuff he would be doing. I will tell you another person who is also that way or is similar to the ideological paper trail is the Chief Justice John Roberts, who was always kind of an incremental guy in terms of his paper trail before being appointed, and has tried to, at least from the outside looking in, you never know what actually goes on there, but from the outside looking in, you would think he's trying to build the collaboration and not destroy stare decisis and previous opinions and things of that nature. It's just it's a very nuanced way to look at it. Then the other, there's a theory that doesn't apply necessarily to Kavanaugh, but more broadly to the Supreme Court, is that there is a general kind of pull. I've heard this argument for decades, that when Supreme Court justices get in the beltway and they're in that milieu, that they get pulled more to the center left, that that's kind of the natural beltway ideology, and that pull will take somebody who you might have thought was going to be maybe right of center and pull them more towards left of center over the course of their career. That was probably most illustrated, or at least most recently illustrated, by David Souter, who ended up voting in ways that they never expected, and Roberts voted in ways, has continued to vote in ways that are unexpected, at the very least, from people who thought that he was going to be a solid vote for this kind of ideology.
Gary, you want to wrap it with that other Kavanaugh story?
Yeah, I actually misspoke, I think. That case, the name is Murdaugh.
Murdaugh.
I think I've been reading too much Kavanaugh today, so yeah. Sorry about that. Obviously, that gentleman, Paul Murdaugh, who was driving the boat, has since died, but the other members of the other people that were in the boat, there are various lawsuits going on, and it's starting to come out in depositions that although the cops were very clearly told that the Murdaugh kid was drunk and driving the boat, this is coming out from audio from their body cameras on the night of when they were doing their interviews, their reports omit all of that. And they're getting in sticky situations where lawyers are playing them the audio and then showing them the reports, and they're having to try to obfuscate and try to justify why they did not, in fact, put this very powerful family's, you know, youngest son's name down. And it's going to be unfolding on that case. And I also thought it was interesting at the very end of that article, they noted that everyone involved in the boating case had agreed to provide DNA samples to the police for use in the murder case.
Wow.
The cops basically went to all these people and were like, look, you know, these people died. Obviously, you're all suing. There's all this stuff. So you're suspects. And everyone agreed, you know, no problem. Here's our DNA.
Wow. The story continues. I'm interested in this one. This is definitely going to be...
I'm keeping a close eye on this one.
A movie of the week. All right. Mark's got to go eat some yellowtail.
And, fatty yellowtail, here I come. I will... you're traveling this week, so I'll let you tell everybody where you're going, right?
Yeah, I'm going to North Carolina. Good Nights Comedy Club in Raleigh. So we can come out tonight. Probably a few tickets left. Doing a live podcast and then a stand-up show as well. You can go to amcroll.com for all the live shows. What do you got, Mark?
I've got come up to the Hamptons this weekend to the Capri. If you want to sweat off a little weight, go down to Palm Springs at the V Hotel, or San Clemente at Casa Tropicana, downtown Tenney, Mediterranean Tapas, or Engine Company 28.
All right, I'll tell you about Geico last but not least. Do you own, do you rent? Well, you do one or the other, and then there's your automotive policy. How about you get your bundle working with Geico? You take your automotive and policy, and you bundle it up with your homeowners or your renter's insurance. It's a good thing, too, because you already have so much to do around the house. So go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save and just how easy it is to save. When you get your bundle working at Geico, that is geico.com. So until next time, this is Adam Carolla for Mark Garagos saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.